Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is Radiolab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich. And this hour, we've been talking about the placebo effect.
Yes, about the power of belief and suggestion. And thus far, we've looked at it from the perspective of the patient. But certainly the doctor has a role to play in all of this.
And so I have a story to tell you.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
It happens to be about a doctor.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Albert Mason. I was trained in medicine in Guy's Hospital.
Back in the 1950s, Albert Mason was delivering babies at a hospital in London. He was a young guy, an anesthesiologist, and he was looking for a new way to anesthetize his patients, the moms. Something maybe safer than drugs. And one day, he ran across a book about medical hypnosis.
Medical hypnosis. And I just read the technique and tried it out on some friends.
And under what circumstances? Like you would put a watch and have it swing back and forth, left and right?
No, I just lay them down on a couch and say, now I want you to let your whole body go loose, let your arms go loose, let your legs go loose. And it worked on some people and not on others.
But the more he practiced, the better he got. You know, putting his friends under.
To a trance state.
Getting them to remember stuff from their fifth birthday.
And all sorts of games that we played as medical students.
And so he took this little party trick into the delivery room and it worked.
That's right. I delivered about 20 babies under hypnosis. And the moment you start to do hypnosis, you start to get a reputation as being somebody who has power.
Well, I would think you'd get two reputations. The patients might think you have power, and the doctors might think you're a quack.
Well, both of those are true. But at that time, it was kind of fun.
Because the hospital administrators were kind of curious about this young doctor slash hypnotist. Maybe he was onto something, who knows? So they started to send him all kinds of patients.
Skin disorders, asthma.
And he'd hypnotize them, which led to a weird little discovery. Of all things that hypnosis might help, the one that seemed to work the best was warts.
Warts?
Warts, yes.
To my delight, I found that if you hypnotized them and told them that the warts would go, they went in a certain number of cases.
Let's fast forward a little bit.
Okay.
Dr. Mason is treating lots of these warts patients, and things are going pretty well.
And one day, a young boy came to this hospital. He was wheeled in on a gurney, and the first thing I saw was his arm. I could have dropped through the floor, because this wasn't a dozen warts. This was millions. This was the entire surface of the skin. It cracked and got infected, and his life was impossible. He couldn't go to school because he smelt. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen the photographs of this boy.
Just check this out. Look at these pictures here.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like he has a black hide over his whole body.
It looked like an elephant skin.
Mm.
That's what it looked like.
Jeez.
Yeah, well, so they take this poor boy to surgery.
The surgeon, a man called Jerry Moore, was trying to graft healthy skin onto the hands. And when I saw this skin, I said to Mr. Moore, why don't you treat him by hypnosis? And he looked at me and he said, well, why don't you? And he walked out.
Was his, why don't you, in despair or in contempt?
I think a mixture of both.
And by the way, when you ask that question, you're the kid asking the senior practitioner, so...
I was cheeky.
Yeah, you were a little cheeky.
So
there's Albert Mason, cheeky, alone with his boy with the million warts, and Albert asks him, do you mind if I hypnotize
you? And this kid, who was 15, said, okay.
But didn't you have to tell the parents?
No. Couldn't have got away with it today, could I? So I hypnotized this kid. I told him, the warts on your right arm will shrivel up and die, and new skin will grow.
And why did you choose the right arm?
Oh, I had to start somewhere. And I sent him away. He came back in a week, and one arm was clear.
Totally clear. I mean, imagine this. The left arm is black and scaly like, you know, elephant skin. And the right arm is totally normal.
Totally normal looking?
Yes. Well, here's the
come
photo.
Come on.
No, look, it's a real photo. This is verifiable.
It looked like a normal skin, but rather pinker than usual. Slightly pink and soft and supple.
Whoa. This is for real?
Yes. It's like all those thousands and thousands of warts that covered the right arm, I guess they just fell off.
And what were you thinking when you first saw it?
I was thinking, how wonderful. I was thinking, oh, wait till Mr. Moore sees this.
So he takes the boy, he runs down the hall to the operating room where Mr. Moore is in the middle of an operation. He takes the boy up to the big, you know, the glass window.
And I held up both his arms.
One black and scaly, the other pink and raw.
And Moore put down his scalpel. He came out of the theater and he looked and he said, my God. Look at that. And I said, well, I told you warts could go. And he looked at me pityingly. He said, this isn't warts. This is congenital ichthyosiform erythrodermia of Brock.
Well, now, for those of us who are uninitiated, what is romodermatidiopathy?
It's a hopeless condition. Never been known to change.
The surgeon informed Albert Mason that he had just hypnotized away a condition that never once in medical history had been known to go away for any reason whatever.
So he says, we're going to take him to the Royal Society of Medicine to show him to all the dermatologists in London.
Gentlemen, please take your seats.
So Moore took me up there with the boy.
Thank you, Dr. Moore, and to the Royal Society for this opportunity.
And I demonstrated.
Yes.
First of all, I demonstrated how to hypnotize.
Hypnosis is quite easily achieved. You simply lie the patient down and say, now I want you to let your whole body go loose. Let your arms go loose. Let your legs go loose.
And then I showed his arm.
Please, sir, if you don't mind, raise both arms.
They were staggered. In fact, the president...
Gentlemen, this is absurd.
...said that it's inconceivable that this gets well because...
We all know that congenital ichthyosis is incurable.
That was the exact word he used. Incurable.
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 Incurable. And the thing was, since all this took place at a hospital, every stage of it was documented. There are photographs of every step along the way, before shots, after shots, close-ups, all available to reporters. You can imagine what happened.
It was picked up in every newspaper, Time magazine.
Big media story.
In fact, the first I heard about it, I was in bed one morning a year after I'd sent the paper in for publication. And the phone rang and a voice said, this is Whipsnade Zoo. We have an elephant with a skin like a little boy. Can you cure him? And I thought, what the hell are you talking about? And then the phone started to ring and ring and ring, and hundreds of calls, hundreds of letters came in from all over the world. And I had people coming in with the most terrifying illnesses wanting to be cured.
Especially people with that very rare skin condition.
Congenital ichthy, whatever it's called.
Yes, they flocked to him from all over the world. And that's, now here's where the story takes a turn. He would see these patients. He would hypnotize each one at a time, and then send them away, hoping, of course, that they'd get better. And they would come back a week later, and...
None of the others ever got well.
At all?
No.
Not in any way?
No improvement. I've spent the rest of my life trying to understand this phenomenon because I gave up anesthesia.
Just a few years later, Albert Mason quit medicine and he decided to become a psychiatrist. He wanted to understand why he had the touch the first time and why after that it just didn't work. So the central question in your mind was not what happened to the kid, but what happened to me?
That's right. That's right.
And what do you think the answer to that is?
Well, there is a condition called infantile omnipotence. that we all suffer from when we're kids. We think we can do anything. Unconsciously, I knew this was incurable.
Wait a second, because incurable would mean that it had never been cured.
But that's
created an exception, so...
Look, when you're 25 and the president of the Royal Society of Medicine tells you it's incurable, it has an effect.
That's his best guess. He thinks that that word, incurable, changed him just a little bit.
I lost my crazy confidence, even though I had the evidence, but it didn't work.
Confidence is a hard thing to measure. You can't put it on a scale, you can't weigh it, but you can sense it because it's conveyed in a million little ways. How you stand, whether you look your patient in the eye, when you pause, where you pause, what you say, what you don't say. All these things are like signals. And they say to the patient, they murmur to the patient, I can help you. I can do this.
You know, you go to a doctor, you've got this horrible rash all over you, and he says, that's erythema multiforme. And you feel better immediately because he's named it. Well, all he said is many red spots in Latin. But the thing is that he knows what it is. And you feel that, oh, he knows, now I'll be okay.
Because when you're feeling terrible, what you just want to do is hand over the authority for your situation to someone else who's got information, power.
And who's going to tell you you're going to be fine. Yeah.
And maybe that comes from early childhood when it seems to us that our parents have that capacity.
Harvard historian Ann Harrington.
I have a 2-year-old and we're already now at the stage where, you know, he gets a little bump and he comes to me and holds the bit of his body out that's been hurt and I kiss it. And it's okay. And there is a way that mommy's kiss is kind of a placebo effect.
Testing.
And now imagine that you're sick. You know, when you're sick, there's a strong impulse to kind of revert back to that way of interacting with people.
Yeah, let's say something just to get
Shubad duck.
That's Arabic for what do you want?
Hi, Jad. How are you?
I'm good, Dad. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
This is my dad. Do you see how your voice goes on the thing? He's the guy I would bring my boo-boos to as a kid. Tell me what you do. Actually, I still do. Like your title and that kind of thing. Because he happens to be a doctor.
I'm the chairman of the Department of Surgery at Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt is in?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Where we grew up for much of our life.
Where you grew up for much of your life.
Okay, so my dad had no idea why I wanted to follow him around the hospital. I didn't exactly lead with the whole placebo thing. How often do you see patients? Truth is, I feel okay about that, because this show isn't really about lying. It's about healing, the healing process, which doesn't happen in a vacuum. Patient, of course, has to believe in the cure, but the doctor has to create that belief.
Okay, wait, you have to walk slower.
I can't walk slowly.
And how does he do that?
Wait, tell me where we're going now.
We're going to the clinic.
And be more specific. What happens at the clinic?
I have patients scheduled to come and see me today.
These days, my dad's hair is as white as his white doctor coat. But he still sees patients every Wednesday.
Today I have 4 patients.
And that is why I'm here. 1 p.m., clinic begins.
In the clinic.
And as if to illustrate Ann Harrington's basic point...
When you're sick, there's a strong impulse to kind of revert back to that way of interacting with people.
As soon as my dad's first patient shows up, a hairstylist from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, when she walks down the busy hallway and sees him, as soon as she sees him, she bursts into tears.
I guess I'm just scared.
He gives her a hug.
Every time I see him, it's kind of like I have to be strong, and I feel like when I see him, I can let it down because I know that he's going to hug me and make me feel better. I'm a single parent, and I own my own business, and I've always been in survival mode, and I've always had to be strong, and so that's why this has been so hard for me.
They go into a tiny exam room, which is quiet and super intimate compared to the hallway. Dad has Megan sit on a table.
Lift up.
And he gently presses 2 fingers to her neck.
Swallow a little bit. This is your thyroid.
There's a tiny gland in her neck that should be the size of a pea.
This nodule.
But over the past 4 years, it's gotten bigger.
Around 3 inches.
and bigger.
Wide and 2.5 inches in the other direction.
Now it's the size of a golf ball, and it presses against her airways.
You know, at night sometimes I wake up and I'm, you know, and I think, oh God, should I call 911? And I keep asking him every week, are you sure I'm not going to choke?
It's not going to choke me.
It's not going to choke me.
It is not going to choke me.
You sure, you know, just him reassuring me.
It's not going to affect the airway.
I try to remember the little things that he says to me when I'm, especially in the middle of the night when I start feeling anxious or panicking. In the meantime, how do I deal with the anxiety that surrounding this thing? Because, like, I've got...
Patients are anxious.
I'm having lots of anxiety, but I don't know.
We're going to be scared of the unknown.
Part of that is worrying about the future, I think, just because I...
There's nothing to worry about.
Well, I know, but I guess it's just because of my personal responsibilities.
We'll work with you.
You gotta put them at ease.
There is nothing life-threatening today.
You have to put them at ease.
I'm gonna give you a short-term plan and a longer-term plan.
Okay.
If medicine were just science, then all of this talk would be just noise. Because the real business would then happen in the next room where there's this big machine ready to scan Megan's thyroid. But medicine isn't purely science.
Yeah, I mean...
Which my dad admits.
It's an art. It's communication.
Which is why he and Megan talk... and talk and talk and talk for over an hour. In a way, it's a kind of negotiation. She wants to know one thing, like, what if my thyroid has gotten bigger? What if I have to have radiation? Will I have to quit my job? He needs her to focus on anything but the what ifs, to stay focused on what they do know, which, unfortunately, is that they won't know anything for another day.
They'll draw the blood today, and believe it or not, I'd know it within 24 hours.
Okay.
I need to know the size of that thyroid gland.
Okay. Somehow, in the end, despite all the open questions, he gets her to relax.
We're going to work together.
Will you guys stop going out of town so much? It's really inconvenient for me.
How much performance is in it?
What do you mean, performance?
How much of doctoring is having to play a certain role that the patient needs at that moment?
It's just about every bit of it.
So if I were to call it theater, would that offend you or no?
It's not a theater. It is... I'm living that role. Mm-hmm. It's part of me. It's not part of a fake image that I'm projecting.
I think you know what I'm trying to get at. You
not
know.
Really.
No?
Well,
no,
I mean, you call it theater. You can call it theater, but...
I mean, when you don't have the white coat on, you're not, like, in doctor mode. You know, you don't have all the answers. You don't.
And I don't have all the answers then.
But you seem to. And no, particularly with her.
That's what I really wanted to know. That magic pixie dust called certainty. How do you project that instantly to a patient the moment you walk into a room, even when the patient hits you with questions like, Doc, am I going to make it? It can seem kind of mystical, that aura. But then again, there are the props.
Okay, you have to tell me what you're doing now. What is this?
For instance, to rewind a moment, here we are before clinic in my dad's office, and he's just opened up his little coat closet.
Putting my coat on. Then I usually, on the day of the clinic, I choose a clean white coat.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have many to choose from?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Five.
Five blindingly white coats. He flips through them, picks the whitest of the bunch, puts it on, and I swear to you, even now, when I'm older, supposedly wise to these kinds of things, it's like he changes somehow.
Do you ever go to see patients without your white coat on?
I don't like to.
Oh.
It's almost like you're naked without it.
You do seem taller with it on.
I do?
Yeah.
There is inherent power in the props, especially the coat. And if you have any doubt the doctors don't know this, go to a med school, any med school, on the day the new students arrive, and you'll probably find something like this.
Excuse me, if we could all have a seat, we'll start the ceremony.
The white coat ceremony.
Thank you.
It's as close to religious ritual as you can get in medicine, and in fact, the one that we attended at Columbia University in New York...
I asked the students to please stand with me.
...included a chaplain.
As you are able, let us pray together. Compassionate God, bless these new medical students of the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons, and bless the white coats that they receive today. May these white coats be for each student a cloak of compassion, a clear statement of purpose, a sign of assurance and a symbol of respect.
The ceremony.
We pray for the strength and for the
at times has some almost spiritual component.
It's quite moving, I think. I hope you'll find.
That's Arnold and Sandra Gold. They began the White Coat ceremony at Columbia almost 20 years ago.
God be with each student.
And they were in the audience the day we were there.
God be with each of us.
Along with about 250 students and their families.
First, each student is cloaked individually and called by name.
Eric J. Arias. James J. Atra.
They then return to their seats and we see this visual transformation that occurs.
This is a change that you can actually see. These people come into this room with their coats on their arm and they're wearing blue and black and green and yellow, and that's who they are. And you see the room filling up in white, and they see the room filling up in white.
Alexandra J. Borst.
And you know, in the old days, doctors wore black.
It's true. 100 years ago, doctors wore gothic black coats, but then someone discovered germs and had the insight that germs live in dirt.
And because you couldn't see dirt on black,
coats had to be white.
They changed for antiseptic reasons.
And that is when a certain symbolism took hold.
When you think about angels, they're never in red. They're never in black.
Please turn around to face the audience. And I present to you the class of 2010.
Radiolab will continue in a moment.
Radiolab is supported by Cozy Earth. When you think about summer comfort, words like breezy or soft maybe come to mind. With Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear, you'll get the comfort of home wherever you roam, allowing you to elevate your summer getaway no matter where or even if you're getting away. Cozy Earth bedding is temperature regulating and made from top-notch materials, including viscose from bamboo that can turn any living or sleeping space into a sanctuary of luxury and comfort. Their loungewear and pajamas offer you their signature level of comfort while maintaining an elegant fit so you can look cute and be comfy even if you're taking a long flight or car trip. Cozy Earth provided an exclusive offer for Radiolab listeners. Get 35% off site-wide when you use the code Radiolab at www.cozyearth.com. That's 35% off at cozyearth.com, code Radiolab. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth.